It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope that it's successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of New Books Network. This is your host, Morteza Hajizadeh from Critical Theory Channel. Today, I'm honored to be speaking with John Manuel Rubino, who has published a wonderful book with Oxford University Press. The book is called The Dangerous Life and Ideas of Diogenes the Cynic. So, John, welcome to New Books Network.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we start the interview, can you briefly introduce yourself, talk about your expertise, and also why you decided to write this book?
So I've been working during the past 20 years on social history of ancient Greece, analyzing social inequalities. I've been working around what we call sometimes in the American-speaking, English-speaking world, subaltern studies. I keep on working on that field, social history of ancient Greece, through biographies. And Diogenes is, in fact, one of my field of work through this idea of social biographies, meaning that through Diogenes, my point was to try to study the place, the situation, the social condition of beggars in ancient cities. And this is my first area of work. And the second one is history of ancient sport.
And the book that you wrote earlier, which I couldn't pronounce, and I must apologize to you, that's, what is it called in English? Has it been translated to English?
Milo of Croton. It's Milo of Croton, the birth of sport or the invention of sport. Yes, it is a biography I released in 2016, studying the condition of the birth of sport during the 6th century BC Greece. Through the first athlete we can try to build a biography about or build a portrait. So Milo was the most famous athlete of antiquity. He's been a seven times Olympic champion in wrestling, and he had a very interesting life. He is one of the first athletes to follow a very specific diet, athletic diet. He's been a warrior too with his city, Croton, and he was part of Pythagore community. He was in fact the husband of one of Pythagore's daughters. So through Milo of Croton, my point was to understand how in the cities of the 6th century BC the social figure of the athlete a piano. We don't have athletes before that time, but we have them for the next millennium. So the point of the study was to try to understand the condition of birth of sport at that time.
And tell us about this current book that we're discussing, The Dangerous Life and Ideas of the Diogenes the Cynic. There are a lot of books about Diogenes. Why you decided to write this book, and what makes it a bit different from existing books?
Yeah, the point was to try to build an historical portrait. So it was the core idea was not to build a description of the philosophy only, but to provide context to the life of Diogenes and to his philosophy. Meaning that I try through the book to show that there are very strong links between the context of Diogenes' life and his philosophical proposals. So that was the point. The point was to approach Diogenes in an historical angle and point of view, and not only a philosophical one.
He's quite famous for those who love philosophy, but let's just assume that some of our listeners are not familiar with him. So for the sake of the uninitiated, can you briefly tell us who Diogenes was and what his ideas were, very, very briefly? Then we'll delve deeper into his ideas in your book.
Yeah, he's a man of the 4th century BC. He's a Greek from a Greek city from the Black Sea, Sinope. And the main point of the Cynic philosophy was to defend the idea of a life of simplicity, a life of autarky, with no belonging, no attachment to anything.
So let's talk about some of his ideas. But before that, what were some available direct textual sources about him that we have that have come from antiquity? How do we know about him and his life?
Yeah, we have some Greek sources, Latin sources, and Arabic medieval sources, which are providing a lot of anecdotes about Diogenes. The biggest a piece of evidence comes from an author of the 3rd century after Christ, with an homonym of Diogenes. His name is Diogenes of Laertius. So he was an historian of philosophy in a way, and he made kind of a history of ancient philosophy through the different schools and through portraits, and he made a portrait of Diogenes and the other Cynics too, other Cynic philosophers too, and through this life of Diogenes we get a big part of the information and data we have about Diogenes. Basically we have mainly anecdotes about Diogenes' life and kind of wisdom sayings that Diogenes is supposed to have said in different situations and context. We don't have much documents from Diogenes himself, apart from some fragment of political philosophy treatise that we get from Philodemos of Gadara. So we have some very little, very few texts of Diogenes himself transmitted through fragments. But most of our knowledge comes from anecdotes and sayings attributed to Diogenes.
Who was his father, and how did he become? Diogenes himself became a slave in your book. You discuss that part. So can you tell us a little bit about his life before he decided to become a cynic, and also how he was enslaved and how he gained his freedom back?
Okay, so he's born in Sinope, so in a Greek city of the south shore of the North Sea, the Black Sea, sorry. He lived there for the first part of his life with his father and his family. His father, Icesios, was sometimes at least a magistrate, so he had some responsibilities in the city, dealing mainly with the change of money on the market. It was what Greek called trapezites, so meaning someone was changing money mainly and doing some kind of banking activity. So that's the first information we have about Diogenes. We also know that he was forced to exile after a kind of complex affair of counterfeited money. So he had to go away from his city very quickly, not to be put in jail or even maybe executed at the time. He was involved in this counterfeiting money affair. And that's the beginning of the story, in a way, of our Diogenes. I mean, the Diogenes as a philosopher. Because as far as we can understand, he began a life of philosophy after this exile, or because of this exile, on the way he was forced to get detached from everything he was attached to until then. So Diogenes as a philosopher begins after this this exile. You ask me about the enslavement. We know that he's been, as many Greeks of the time, he's been abducted by pirates, maybe around 340 or a bit after that. And he was sold to a Corinthian master, Xeniades, who made him work with his kids. So he was at the same time a kind of tutor for the children, tutor of children of Xeniades. And then he was also a steward of his estate. And after some years, he was released, he was freed, and he came back to freedom because of a decision of enfranchisement of Xeniades, his master. So yes, he had a kind of very agitated life, in a way, because he had to suffer exile, he had to suffer enslavement. So he's been, because of these experiences, he's been going through a lot of different social conditions, social position, social experiences, and this is part of his portrait, and it explained to the way he developed his own philosophy and this ability to get detached from everything.
And when did he become this wandering philosopher? When did he decide to, and why? Why did he decide to kind of abandon everything and start wandering around?
The wandering part must have become when he went in exile, but when did he exactly become a philosopher, we are not sure. Maybe during the 360s, he might have met Antisthenes in Athens at the beginning of the 360s, and it could be the beginning point of his wandering life. But about chronology here, there is nothing much that is clear. We don't have so many chronological details about Diogenes. We don't even know when he was born. At the end of the 5th century BC, but nothing more precise than that. And we don't really know when he died. He might have died in 324 during an Olympic year. Some sources say that. He might have died in 323 during the same year as Alexander. Some documents say that. So we know he died in the 320s, but difficult to be more precise about that.
Let me put it this way: why did he show contempt for social conventions?
Yeah, the cynic body of doctrine is attacking every kind of social convention. So the point is to come back either to simplicity or to nature. So every time there is a social convention, cynics contest it or try to demonstrate this is just nothing more but a social convention. This is not a fact of nature. So you don't need to respect property. This is a social convention. You don't need to marry. You don't need to build a family. You don't need to feel part of any kind of group, tribe, village, citizenship. The only belonging is a kind of natural one, the belonging to a brotherhood of man, if you want, humanity.
And was he ever subject to violence or contempt because of his way of life and because of his ideas during his own life? I'm sure his ideas were not that popular by the authorities of the time.
Yeah, it's a contrasted situation. At the same time, it seems that Diogenes was appreciated in Athens and Corinth, where he lived. He shared his life in between Athens and Corinth. So it seems that he was appreciated by most of people living there. But at the same time, he and most of philosophers have been attacked, sometimes physically, during the 5th, the 4th century and the century after that. And Diogenes was one of them. We have an anecdote telling that he's been beaten one day by an Athenian named Midias. And then he came back the next day with some boxing gloves and decided to pay back to Midias. So what is specific with Diogenes is not that he suffered violence. Most of Cynic philosophers suffered from verbal or physical violence, but what is specific with Diogenes is he was responding. He was using violence too, while someone like Plato or Socrates would not, in the same situation, have used violence. But yes, philosophers were contesting some common rules, the social conventions you were referring to before. And because of that, some people felt insulted and reacted in a violent way.
And what was his ideas about wealth and the wealthy class in general? Did he advocate for poverty?
In a way, yes, you could say that. He advocated for autarky, for frugality. The point is that you have to decrease your needs. So the relationship with poverty and wealth is quite elaborate. In fact, at the end of the 5th century BC and the beginning of the 4th century, you have a kind of movement in the philosophical schools and treaties about oikonomia, what Greeks call at the time oikonomia, where it gave our economy. And oikonomia is a kind of new field of thinking, which is about the management of the household of someone. So new terms appear in the Greek language, oikonomos, which is the guy who is administering his house, the man who is administering his house, the verb oikonomeo, which means that you are managing your household, and etc. And what I'm trying to say is there is a kind of new autonomous field of science, which is about understanding the rules of domestic management. And the Cynics have been part of that movement and have been developing some thoughts about what you need in a house, what you don't need, what relationship it has to be between your needs and your means. And the main point here is that in Diogenes' idea, the relationship of someone with wealth and poverty is quite easy. Even if you have a huge money, if you have lots of social obligation and you have lots of needs, you can feel poor. So there is a distinction between the fact of poverty and the feeling of poverty. You can have a lot of wealth and still feel poor because you feel that your wealth is not enough to face your needs. So the point of the Cynic philosophy in matter of wealth and poverty is to decrease your needs to the minimum. So you will feel rich, whatever is the situation. You will always have more than what you need. So in a way, you could describe the Cynic philosophy as the choice of poverty. And in another way, you could say that in a Cynic point of view, Cynic life is to be rich, whatever is your material situation.
And you spoke about his, in a way, we can argue that he was kind of advocating for frugality. But he transformed the idea of, let's say, begging and turned it into something reciprocal, a reciprocal practice. How did he do that? And what did he mean by begging being a reciprocal practice?
Yeah, the thing is, in the social life of the cities of the time, there is a value, very important, a key value, which is called philia, that we can translate by reciprocity. And philia is a kind of relationship you have to build with people around you, your family, your friends, your neighbors. And this kind of relation of reciprocity will provide protection and security when you need it. So you help your neighbor, and someday when you will need his help, he will provide it. That's the logic of the system. In a way, it's a kind of social security system, but the ancient version of it. And so the point is, you always have to build this kind of reciprocal relationships. And beggars in the Greek world were considered as exceptions to that. They were parasites. They were understood as parasites because they were never giving back anything. So you give something to the beggar, and the beggar never gives back. So in a Greek point of view, this was a huge social issue, because then the beggars were out of the social game, if you want. And what is original with the Cynic philosophy on that point is that Diogenes said, okay, we don't ask for alms. In fact, we ask for alms, but we provide in return some kind of philosophical help, philosophical advice, orientations. So it is reciprocal. So what is original with the philosophical way of begging is that exactly the fact that begging is no longer a kind of asymmetric behavior or social action, but it's a reciprocal one, because the beggar asks for alms but provides something in return. So it's a kind of re-evaluation of the act of begging.
That's a quite interesting way of looking at it. What about the idea how he also believed that we can achieve self-sufficiency and freedom by practicing one's body? What did he mean by that? And how do we achieve those ideas of self-sufficiency and freedom through body practices?
The thing is, the first point is cynicism is not only a body of doctrine, it's a philosophy of action, in action. So your body is involved in your philosophy, because you are acting every day as an agent of your own philosophy, not only a scholar talking about ideas, but you are behaving in a physical point of view and in an everyday point of view as a cynic. And the body is involved because the body has some needs. So it's a question of comfort. For cynics, you have to try to get rid of every kind of comfort in your life. You just have to go back to the essential needs. So if you feel cold, you have to get used to feel cold. And Diogenes was supposed to grasp in winter statues covered with snow to increase his resistance to cold. And if you live outside, you have to be able to resist to the heat of the sun too. And Diogenes was reputed to roll himself in very hot sand in summer to learn to resist heat. So the point is to give the body, to increase the body abilities to be able to face any kind of discomfort. That's the same idea as before, in a way. You have to decrease your needs and increase your ability to be okay to face situations, even uncomfortable ones.
And Diogenes is usually associated with dogs, right? How did he and other cynics were identified with dogs, and did he? And the idea behind that is, of course, to aspire towards nature. and or the Greek idea of divinity, which I'm very keen to hear more about.
Antisthenes before Diogenes and the Cynic pupils after that were often called dogs, and it was at the beginning an insult. The term of cynicism comes from the Greek term kuon, which means dog, and so at the beginning that's an insult. But what Diogenes did is to grasp that insult and make a kind of coat of arms of it, like a philosophical coat of arms of it, saying, "Yes, I am a dog. I am a dog because I live like a dog. I am honest like a dog. So I will react honestly and spontaneously to things. I live a life of frugality. I am always happy with what I have. If I have a bone, it's fine. If I have bread, it's fine." So the point is to use a dog as a kind of model, role model, because in Cynic point of view, there is a kind of hierarchy with men on the bottom, gods on the top, and in between animals, because men are really dependent on comfort, while animals are less dependent on comfort, more autarchic, and the gods are kind of absolute model of autarky. They don't need anything. If they don't eat, no problem. If they don't drink, no problem. So the gods are kind of a theoretical model expressing the idea of autarky. And men are at the bottom of that system. And the only exception is sage men who can work on their philosophical abilities and who can be positioned in a way between animals and gods. But every other man is at the bottom of the pile in that point of view. So yes, the Cynics were called dogs and claimed to be ones because of that.
It also demonstrates the Cynics' ideas of freedom as well, right?
Yeah, you could say that. The idea is that your needs are things you depend on. So it's kind of enslavement. So if you want to be free, you have to be able to get rid of everything that enslave you. So in Cynic point of view, in Diogenes point of view, there are some things that you can be tempted to desire. You can be tempted to get a better status. You can be tempted to search for more money, or you can be tempted to search for more glory. For example, if you are an athlete, and the point is to get rid of that desires, this kind of desires, this kind of temptations, and go back to a life of frugality and simplicity. And this is synonymous of freedom. As long as you don't depend on your needs, on as long as you have very few needs, then you are free.
And this whole philosophy of cynicism, it's different from Stoicism, but I'm guessing there is a little bit of overlap. Am I right to assume that?
Yes, you could say that Stoics are Stoic philosophical movement is a kind of child of cynicism philosophical movement. The one of the difference is that the tendency to transgression, which is very, very strong in a Cynic approach of philosophy, is more or less absent from Stoic philosophy. So the Stoic are some kind of reasonable cynics, if you want.
It's a nice way to put it there. Thank you very, very much, Jean, for talking with us on New Books Network about your wonderful book, The Dangerous Life and Ideas of Diogenes the Cynic. It's a very short and accessible book, and it's quite insightful. There are lots of great ideas which can beautifully introduce the ideas of Diogenes to us. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us on New Books Network.